Hi, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Mac Richtol is with us. Matt is, of course, a New York Times journalist, best-selling writer. We're talking about his latest work, Dead on Arrival. We'll get to your calls and more with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Matt's website, by the way, is linked up. It's his name at coasttocoastam.com, Matt Richtol. Matt, we were talking about driverless cars and trucks and things, and you were just ready to jump into something.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, we lose 30-some thousand people on the roads due to death every year, to say nothing of the hundreds of thousands who are really severely injured. And that has essentially been an epidemic since the advent of the car. It's the most dangerous thing that you will do all day, and arguably the most dangerous thing you'll do in your life, and, you know, unless you're a cliff diver or a hang glider. And we have to find a way to solve that problem. So that's one really interesting issue. But that's on the practical policy side. I'm just curious of your thoughts on that before I move to
it. What if technology fails? You're sitting, let's say, in the back seat of the car like it's a limo without a driver, and there's nothing you can do. You can't override it. You can't jump there in the front. You know, the car's buzzing along at 65 miles an hour, and somebody either hacks into it or the technology fails for some reason, you're gone.
Yeah, look, in no way do I want to be glib about that. So let me say, I don't think we have solutions to those yet, but I don't think those are insurmountable. So one potential pro you have is dealing with, presuming we can deal with the questions you've asked, you have the pro of dealing with the most dangerous thing you'll do all day. But let me give you something else, and this is neither a pro nor con, it just is a reality. You have really powerful market forces that will ultimately push this ahead, and I'm not sure, I would say they're very likely inexorable. And they are these. First of all, you've got car companies who, at least, except for in the very recent months and even the last year or two, cars have been hard for them to sell. So they're looking to reboot, if you will, their entire infrastructure to have an excuse to sell new cars over and over again.
So they force you to buy one of these.
You could call it force, and I'm not taking a side on this. I'm just saying, if you look how the system works over time, they're highly incentivized and highly capitalized. But, George, let me just add this. They are in league in this case with the technology company.
Oh, I agree. I mean, what happens one day when they pass laws in various states that it's illegal for you to drive a car? You must get into a driverless car. For the reasons you just cited, it's safer. Statistics show that fatal accidents in a driverless car are negligible compared to the 30,000 that die every year around this country. It's illegal for you to drive a car. Sorry, folks, your license is only good for identification. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, look, let me move the... I think we're mostly having a violent agreement, but for the most part...
not too violent.
Not too violent. We're having a friendly agreement. But leaving the truckers out, and I think that's a super important point you brought up that connects to the different idea of technological replacement of workers, but just on the kind of market forces combined with safety, I don't know that we'll ever get to the point of saying you can't drive a car, but what the interesting point you've raised is when I talk to safety experts, and I've done stories about this, the period they worry about is one you've sort of alluded to, George. It's when you have driverless cars and humans on the road at the same time. And that you may be safer, that may be the most volatile mix of all. Because imagine if George is driving down the street and there comes a driverless car, and George doesn't know what the driverless car is going to do.
You can't road rage the car, can you?
Well, I mean, I think that would be a terrific piece of new software, driverless car road rage software, where the cars
chase you,
flip each other off.
They chase you and everything else. That's right.
Yes. So, anyway, I do think, look, one more piece that's, you know, look at what Uber's doing. They're investing in this, too. A lot of money wants this to happen.
Oh, yeah. Why? Because it's cheap. because of no labor.
It's labor.
Once you amortize your vehicle and depreciate it,
yes,
there's no cost there for you anymore.
There's no cost. So you get rid of the labor, which is always most expensive. But just let me give you one more thing connecting some other dots we've talked about. When I got in the Google car, I was having a conversation with the folks who were, as marketing folks and PR folks go, they're very straight up. And they were telling me a story of when they first put Google employees in their cars going up and down the freeway, in their driverless cars. And they essentially videotape their employees so they can watch human behavior while in these cars. And they noticed that they're, even though the drivers, the Google drivers were sort of still sitting at the wheel, they were able to glance at their devices. And the reason I mention that is, one of the overriding considerations for people who say we won't see driverless cars is that we have this culture of driving and culture of cars. I would say, having watched my own behavior and having heard these stories, that the nature of our toys has changed. It went from being our cars to being our gadgets, and we are now virtually driving the globe. And so, you know, watch how people text and drive. They're as interested in the screen in their hand as they are in the real world outside their monitor. So it may be that culturally we're able to give up what has been the most American of experiences, which is driving a car and experiencing the freedom and materialism of it. I don't know.
Absolutely.
I don't mean to be so sound prescriptive here because I'm not taking sides, but that, from looking at it, that's how the evidence starts to stack up to me.
What happens to all the money they make on DUI arrests? That would go away with a driverless car. If you sit in the back and you're drunk, how do you know, you're not the driver.
Well, let me say this, George. That, as a citizen, that's money I'd be willing to give up.
Yeah, I know.
That's 13,000 deaths a year. My kids aren't old enough to drive, but when they are, I hope we have some solution to drunk driving because that scares the daylights out of me.
All right, let's go to the phones for the time that we have left. Joe in Long Island, New York is with us. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, Matt.
Hi, Joe.
I think in terms of what's going on today, I think of what Julius Caesar said, "E tu, Brute." But my question would be on the Internet of Things.
Yep.
Dams, roller coasters are put on the web and could be hacked. And then addictions to cell phones. Here in New York, a couple of women actually went onto the railroad tracks when they dropped their cell phones, which is a crazy thing to do. You know, you have to let it go. And also, in terms of worldwide use of smartphones, people are putting a large proportion of their income out in places like India and Africa for these phones. But I guess it's worthwhile in terms of like a better communication system for them.
Yeah, let me just handle the addiction one first. Joe, I'm really glad you asked it. I'll give you just a touch of science here. I've thought a lot about whether we are addicted, and my previous nonfiction, my last nonfiction book, A Deadly Wandering, was the story of a texting and driving crash coupled with the story, The Science of Attention. And I asked the question, are we addicted? I've come to the conclusion that we can't use the word addiction. We have to use the word highly compelling or very compulsive. And the reason is the clinical definition of addiction has to do, it shows that there are changes in the brain. So if you take cocaine or other drugs of addiction, you will see changes to your gray matter. We can't show that with the phone yet. So what we say is it's highly compelling or it's a compulsive device. Can I just speak to the question about the adoption of phones in poor places where
mm-hmm.
people are shelling out money?
Mm-hmm.
Joe, you also said, you know, it might be worth it. They're getting communications. One of the interesting things we've seen in those places is that they have, in effect, bypassed the landline infrastructure. So it might be expensive for the individual. For the society itself, it's been quite a nice leap ahead. Think of the billions of dollars we spent laying lines across the country to give everyone a landline through universal service. So it's a terrific point you made, Joe. Let's just hope they're using it to, communicate and not, drive a car in the crowded streets.
Joe, thank you for your call. Let's go to Gino in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Gino, take it away.
How you doing today, guys?
Good, Gino.
Hey, Gino.
I have a big issue about the automated trucks. I've been driving for 22 years from Reno up over Donner Pass, which is like 80 miles of snow getting down to Sacramento, not to mention how much this last winter kicked our butts. I know you say that the cars being on a monorail and being a mapped out area and whatnot, how finite can they be mapped out when you have all the different snow conditions? I mean, a lot of our trucks that we have where I work at ITS Logistics in Sparks, Nevada, they want to go automatic because they say they're better efficient-wise and whatnot, for the fuel and everything else. They're 10-speed or 12-speed automatics. But they're also, equipped with sensors and everything. So if you leave them in automatic mode as you're going over the hill, especially in weather conditions, if you have a 40,000-pound trailer, when you start touching the brakes, it automatically wants you to shift you into that lower gear that you really don't want to be in because it's going to bring your torque up on the wheels and you're going to break that lateral traction and then you're done. I've seen so many accidents in 22 years and 2.2 million miles going over Donner that I can't, I don't want to try and recount them all, but, the mechanicality of having a stick and somebody on the road, I think we're not at that point yet where it can be completely automated. I think you're going to have a buttload more accidents with not having, certain things in place. I mean, how's an automated truck going to know how much snow's on the road and what speed you should be at to not break that lateral track?
Well, they would probably, and as you know, Gino, I'm opposed to driverless trucks 100%. Because I don't want it to eliminate jobs. But I would assume, Matt, that these trucks will have sensors, and they'll know everything about the weather conditions.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's a great question Gino asked, because I think the way to pressure test these things is to ask the extreme case. If you're just driving down a dry street in the middle of daylight, you're not really testing the thing. And, Gino, I think George gave a great answer. I would say in the same breath, that's probably one of the hardest things for me to imagine that we could do on an automated basis. And just by way of example, I live in the Bay Area, Gino, but I grew up in Colorado. And when those are the most harrowing drives, say going up to Steamboat. So I don't know how they'd figure that kind of thing out. I do want to say one thing about trucks that the state of California is looking at and trucking companies are looking at. One of the in addition to manual labor, one of their biggest costs is fuel. And they talk about creating automated vehicles so they can draft one another and use less fuel. So that's a place I can't imagine that would work on Donner Pass. I mean, the only thing uglier than people eating each other is seeing a truck go over the side there. So
yeah, with somebody in it.
Yeah, so I think that's a great, Gino, I think you raised a really good question that someone's going to have to wrestle with, and I can tell you they don't have the answer to that yet.
Where do you see things heading, Matt, technologically?
Well, let me just talk about the individual level. I think what's going to happen is that to the focused go the spoils. And I think what's going to happen as we get more educated about the intense draw of our devices and the possibly even virulent impact they can have on our attention, people are going to do what you suggested in your very introduction of me. They're going to enslave their devices and learn to not allow their devices to be their master. I think that's the first step in human learning that's going to happen. But beyond that, the temptation's going to grow and grow and grow and grow, and virtually everything around us is going to get automated. You can already see it with all new cars. You don't even have to open your trunk any longer. You're not going to have to set your heat. You're not going to turn on your lights. Things are going to become automated very, very quickly. I think you're gonna order your devices around with your spoken word. Do you have an Alexa or a Google Home, George?
No, I don't. I was just gonna bring that up too. What do you think of those systems?
Just as in our household, they've been a little bit of a lifesaver, and I can see the allure of them. My kids are always asking, "Daddy, play this song. Daddy, play this song," and I have to go to my device and call up the song on on Napster,
right,
or Rhapsody, whatever it is. Now they just say, "Alexa, play," Well,
so in some cases, it's convenient.
All they listen to is coast to coast. They're 7 and 9.
That's perfect. But yeah. in some cases, it's convenient. On the others, I mean, don't you want to get up and move around and do stuff? I mean, I think people will be so wedded to Alexa. Alexa, do this. Alexa, do that. Eventually, we'll have robots that take our shoes off.
Yeah. No. So and so that's another place where we're going to have to learn enough as humans to begin to use that power effectively. Let me give you an example of where we could reuse that time. I don't mind if I don't have to go up and turn on the radio. But what is a problem for me and a problem across a huge swath of this country and the world now is if we don't move at all. So I would rather use that time. I love to play tennis. I'd rather add up my minutes and be on a tennis court. But I better do something to burn the
calories. Sure, but how many people will do what you do, and that is get up and move and go work out and play tennis?
But George, that is the very question and the very thing really that this conversation in the end is about is, can we learn enough so that we take advantage of the tools that are in front of us and enslave them rather than have them cause us to do things or behave in ways that are counterproductive? Perfect example, simple example. Texting, wonderful. Texting and driving, deadly. Eating food that is stored at a supermarket when you live in an urban area and can't farm yourself, great. Going to the vending machine and eating only chewed Cheetos, stupid. You'll give yourself diabetes. You know, I'm not suggesting not having an occasional Cheeto, but you know, you take my point. We have got to take all this learning that people are doing, whether at the science level or the journalistic level, and apply it to our daily lives. And unfortunately, learning is very slow. And we evolve or we adapt our behavior very slowly, even though we have the information in front of us.
Well, that is absolutely true. I mean, I love technology if it's applied to the right things. Then there's some other things I think it might go too far.
It can go too far. I mean, you know, some of the stuff we get sold on, let's go back to the car for a second and where technology's going. Remember I said earlier that car makers were having trouble getting people into the showroom? Well, they started jacking up the dashboards with touch screens. You can't find many a neuroscientist to tell you that it's a good idea to be looking down at your touchscreen while you're driving.
And trying to fidget around to find the buttons you need to punch.
Not a good idea. Consumer Reports has written endlessly about the risks of those kind of multifaceted screens. That's an example where someone tried to make something look more efficient,
mm-hmm.
appear glitzy, and was quite counterproductive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Stay with us, Matt. We're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come back. A little quick notes. Like us on Facebook, folks. Follow us on Twitter. We send out little messages every day. And, of course, if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Matt Brichtil with us. His book is called Dead on Arrival. It comes out on Tuesday. So in some time zones, it's ready to roll. You can get it on Amazon, of course. And your major bookstores, and it's a great read. It's scary. It's a novel, and it could happen. So we'll be back with your final calls. Those of you on hold, just hang right where you are on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Matt Brichtil. Matt, Google plays a big role in your book, Dead on Arrival.
Yes.
Tell me why.
Well, Google is about as powerful as it gets right now, and Google's business is your attention. And let's see, how can I do this without spoiling it? How about this? The book winds up traveling from Steamboat to the Centers for Disease Control to the medical campuses of UCSF in San Francisco into a secret Google complex, and that has something either to do with the problem in the book or its solution. Just to be a little bit more specific, look, I'll say it again. Google's business is getting your attention. The way in which companies get your attention may just have an impact on the way your brain works and on the electrical impulses in your brain. So can I leave it there without spoiling it?
You sure can. We don't want to do that to you. That would be fair.
That would not be fair.
Let's go to other callers. Joe in the Bronx. Welcome to the program, Joe.
Hey, George. How are you?
Good, Joe.
Good. Matt, you know, what's been on my mind recently has been North Korea and their testing of the ICBMs. And then when they announced that they do have the capability of reaching Alaska and perhaps the potential to reach other cities around our great nation. I was thinking, how can we curb the technology that is available to these rogue nations, realizing that necessity is the mother of invention? We now have, where you've been testing the anti-ICBM missile system. What do you think will be the end result of all this, ridiculous nonsense going on with North Korea?
Well, I mean, look, I don't want to speak out of turn. It's not my area of expertise. I'm a science and technology reporter, but I will say that you brought up a very important point, as I understand it from what I read by my colleagues, and that is that during the previous administration, at least, I believe that the way we subverted some of the nuclear powers of North Korea was using our hacking capabilities. So I think, and I will tell you also from someone I know who has spent many years in the CIA, I was speaking to him just the last few days, that a lot of the people they are seeking in those organizations are very capable with technology, because if technology is going to be used in weaponry against us, then we have to be able to subvert it through work of our own. But I don't want to be too specific about North Korea, despite how good your question is, because I'm not informed enough. I don't know if George has something he wants to add there.
No, I'll let you stay just with that. We've got many other calls and not enough time remaining. We'll go to Lewis in Las Vegas. Welcome to the show, Lewis.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to make a couple comments about just technology and people in general. I think the problem is people just put faith in technology too fast and too soon. Like with the driverless cars, my prediction with driverless cars is that, you know, when people just let the car drive, and then eventually when they have to drive themselves, they'll end up being bad drivers because they don't have experience driving. And I feel it could be the same thing with driverless trucks, because like the other driver from Reno, these trucks have to go through snow and rain. And also one other thing, you know, if a truck is by itself and it's running on its own, you know, what prevents it from being hacked, you know, and all of a sudden I can hack a truck and then, you know, I get a living room furniture delivered to my house, you know, so 'cause no system's perfect. So that's all what I bring up.
Yeah, those are good questions, and one of the big issues that the regulators who look at this are exploring is what happens in that moment of transition if a person has to take over the car. Will they have the capability? I don't know if you remember that the problem. I think there was a problem with a Tesla at one point, and if memory serves, I'd hate to be quoted on this because it's been a little while, but I did cover this issue. I think that there was a problem that the gentleman had when he had to take over, and he didn't do his job in taking over. It wasn't even the car's fault. It was the problem between the car and the handoff. So it's a really good point that, you know, you're talking about basically a computer that has human-like intelligence interacting with an actual human. And I don't think we know how that's quite going to go yet.
Well, and the handoff isn't going to be that easy if you're sitting in the back, for example, or in a bucket seat, even in the front.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's
traveling at 60 miles an hour, let's say. That's not going to be easy.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. But again, I mean, I just to throw in a couple reality checks on this, you know, we already have adaptive speed control or cruise control in many, many, many cars, and it's generally, I believe, thought to be safer than a human driving on the road. Again, this is something, it's the middle of the night now, so I don't want to get delirious on you. For a moment there, I thought I was talking to Edward R. Murrow. Look, that adaptive speed control is great. It senses the cars in front and behind you, and people then tend to do pretty well with that. So, you know, that's a reality check that it can happen.
Let's go to Everett, Washington, where I was just there this weekend. Virginia's with us, west of the Rockies. Hi, Virginia.
Hi. I'm calling from Everett. I'm interested in that little guy from North Korea being able to knock us out. He has a technology, an EMP bomb, over the center of the United States would put out enough rays.
Let me tell you, Virginia, that is a real concern. What could happen in North Korea? Now they're seeing some submarine activity, which they say highly unusual and unprecedented. Oh boy, I wonder what technology is going to do with this, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is where you have to have some faith in your military and your leaders, because I don't think any of us can know what capabilities we have and what they're actually seeing. And I just hope. So I'll just speak here entirely as a father, Virginia. I appreciate your comment. I've got a 7-year-old, a 9-year-old, and this is the kind of stuff that could keep me up at night. So I just hope we're in safe hands.
I do too. So what is your biggest concern, the biggest threat that all of us face with all this kind of technology?
Well, I think the biggest threat, the caller prior alluded to it, and that is having too much faith and being so caught up in the bells and whistles that we become, in effect, catatonic in its face. I mean, we have to preserve ourselves. We have to preserve the human interaction. We have to preserve the way we are analytical, the way we are emotional, the way we are curious. We can't allow these things to do it for us. It's really only a tool. And I think what this thriller Dead on Arrival is about being co-opted and maybe overtaken to the extent that I don't want us to wind up dead on arrival. I want us to wind up using these tools in the most powerful possible way. And it's easy to get caught up for two reasons. One, there's a part of us that wants to just sort of give in and let go and not take charge and not do the hard stuff. And also, we get sold on ideas that things will be made easier for us. And I'm not sure that's always the case.
Back to the calls. Perry's with us, Santa Barbara, California. Hello, Perry. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Matt and George.
Hi, Perry.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Two more comments in addition to my main one, so please let me make all of those. I need you to add my mom, Linda, to the prayer list because she's in the hospital for the third time this month.
Consider it done. Would you want to tell us the affliction at all?
Yeah, you know, about a year and a half ago, she had a very bad case of pneumonia. Never smoked, never drank. You know, never did anything like that, and it scarred her lungs.
Okay.
And so she's going through.
She'll be on the list after the show.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, my friend.
Sure thing.
Also, now, I'm glad you took my call because real
Barry, I'm sorry to hear about that, too.
Oh, well, thank you, Matt. Thank you so much. You know, you think of things. My dad last week was involved in a car accident. He's pushing 80. And he wasn't drinking or anything. He was coming home with, you know, by me while mom's still in the hospital, and he bringing some burgers home. He goes over a big medium, winds up spinning around, hitting another curb and then hitting another object, and the airbag deployed. And I thank God for modern technology, because the airbag did deploy, and I don't think he'd be around right now.
Yeah.
Gave him a fat lip, bottom lip, like Rocky Balboa punched him.
Now do you take the keys away from him?
My mom, yeah, she's saying, you know.
It's time.
Yeah, no, you're not driving anymore. You know, it was an older car, but, you know, it's completely disabled now. And
You would feel secure putting him in a driverless car?
You know, that's what I was thinking, is that if, at that moment when he lost control of that vehicle, I wouldn't want to do it all the time, but if it could back up and, you know, like just put, the hazard lights on and just stop the car, you know, if that technology is available, I mean, that would have been, fantastic, really. I mean, because you're right, Matt, it is the most dangerous thing we do each day.
It's the most dangerous thing we do all day, and somehow we have consistently as a species been unable to show the kind of caution and care that driving a missile you know, requires. And I'm not sure exactly why that is. I mean, you could actually weirdly make the case that we have made the car feel almost too safe, such that we feel like we can let our attention wander. I'm not even talking about texting. Look, we had 40,000 people dying a year before this stuff was going on, and we've cut into those deaths somewhat by making cars safer through the airbags you just alluded to, through wider lanes, through seat belts. But it's almost like we've lulled ourselves into a sense of false safety, and it's not working.
Are we going to get to the point, Matt, where we will have driverless UPS trucks and driverless postal trucks with little robots?
Drones.
Little robots get out and put the mail in your mailbox?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it already. Where technology will go will displace labor when it can. Labor is expensive.
That's its motive.
It's motive. It's a cost savings. It's a very serious problem that we have to grapple with as a country. And I think people on both sides of the aisle have tried to have a serious conversation about it. But the problem is, going back to the beginning of our conversation, that a lot of times amid the shouting, it's hard to answer the question, how are we going to cope with and educate ourselves, educate our population so that we're prepared for a world in which so much automation is happening. And you could argue, George, you could try to make the argument, look, well, let's have less automation. And you would be in a camp of people called Luddites who tried that eons ago. And given our capitalist system and where the incentives are, it's going to be pretty hard to stop that. So we're going to need some other answers about how to stay employed, keep food on the table. I don't think it's impossible. I think those are all doable, but it means being really realistic about what's coming and confronting it in a thoughtful way.
All right, let's take a couple more calls. Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Michael, go ahead.
Thank you so much, George, and thank you, Matt. Matt, last night we had a rabbi on the show talking about the Ark of the Covenant, which contained the two tablets of stone that Moses brought down from Mount Sinai, given by God. We remember that before that ark was built while they were in the wilderness, they were in Egypt. And this goes to your novel. They put blood on their doorposts to keep a plague from killing their firstborn sons, but the Egyptians didn't put it on their doorposts, so their firstborn sons were killed. The Ark is supposedly an advanced technology weapon. Now, the question was asked last night, what if we find this Ark where the rabbi believes it to be, right there on the Temple Mount? What will the world's reaction be?
And some believe it's radioactive, too.
Yeah. Well, here's what I say the world's reaction will be, because George Norrie already proved it.
Wasn't that the plot of, what was that great movie?
Raiders?
Yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Right. Well, look, George Norrie proved what the world's reaction is going to be if we find the Ark, because when we discussed it with Zahi Hawass, the head of Egyptian antiquities, the Arab world went crazy, and Barack Obama ran to Cairo to make his first speech as president, a first international trip as president, where he made an historic speech trying to show that he sympathized with the Muslim Brotherhood, now ousted there. So can you tell me if you're...
All right, and 30 seconds left here, Matt.
That was awesome. You stitched together many different ideas. let me say, I hope Dead on Arrival is as entertaining as your commentary just
Super.
Was.
Super. Matt, you take care of yourself. Keep in touch with us, okay?
All right,
great
thanks,
guest.
Guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Matt Richtol, the name of the book, Dead on Arrival. Scary stuff, folks. Scary stuff indeed. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.